My two cents on this is I'd expect like a 20-30% correction in the S&P to somewhere around 3,500, 4,000 from whatever peak it makes. And therefore, thereafter, the Fed steps in, obviously, and they start cutting rates and they revert to QE. And that will push equities higher again. And why do I say that? Because you got an election in November. I do believe that after the election, stocks are going to get hammered. I think there's going to be a sharp correction. Once the election is over and whoever is in office, after a few months, I expect the stock market to drop precipitously.
Welcome to Thoughtful Money. I'm its founder and your host, Adam Taggart. In Q1, investors could do no wrong. Making money was easy as almost every asset class rose to new highs as markets anticipated coming interest rate cuts. But here at the start of Q2, things are starting to feel a lot less safe. Suddenly, stock prices are plateauing, and services inflation, plus a swiftly rising oil price, are quickly dashing hopes of rate cuts anytime soon. Will the markets offer a bumpier ride from here? To find out, we've got the good fortune to talk today with David Brady, money manager, former FX trader, and author of one of the most popular investing publications on Substack, the FIPIST Report. David, thanks so much for joining us today, all the way from snowy Canada.
Great to be here, Adam. Thanks very much.
Well, hey, David, look, really appreciate you coming on. I'm glad we can make this happen. When I announced on Twitter that you were coming on, a lot of interest from a lot of your followers. Again, really looking forward to this discussion. I put together a number of questions based upon a lot of your recent writings and tweetings. But if we could kick this conversation off with a general question that I like to start with, what's your current assessment of the global economy and financial markets?
Oh, broad question. So let me start with the US specifically. With regard to the economy, I disagree with Mr. Powell. He says the economy is doing great. And they're talking about cuts, but as you just alluded to, inflation's ticking up again, and now people are getting concerned that rates actually may stay higher for longer or even be increased. I look at the economy under the hood, not the major statistics like GDP and so forth. I look at things like the level of bankruptcies, auto loan repos, credit card balances, the cost of those credit card delinquencies, and even the housing market. The median sale price for housing is dropping at a faster rate right now than in 2008. And you can get that off Fred. Just Google it. Those are signs to me that the economy is on life support, far from what Powell is saying. And when you say that rates are likely to go up, I don't see that. I understand why they're saying it. But I actually think with regard to a stock market crash and the risk of one, it's growing significantly day by day. As you said, I believe the market is plateauing as well. And there are certain signals that I'm watching that will tell me it's time to get the heck out of Dodge, such as if you look at a chart of the S&P over the last several months, you can draw a trend line from bottom left up to the right, and it's pretty much a straight line. If that line is broken, I think it's around 5180, 5190, I'm more focused on 5,000. I would be worried if it drops below there. I'm also looking at the 2-year, 10-year yield curve, which is currently negative, but that signaled trouble for the stock market back in 2000 and in 2007. What it did is it went from an inverted curve to a positive curve, in the sense that it turned from negative to positive. And we're close to that again here. So I'm watching that also. So there are a number of signals that I'm watching, but when I see six stocks driving most of the gains in the S&P, That would make me worried by itself. But then when you see these other indicators knocking on the door, it certainly suggests that trouble could be ahead. And actually, just to make a segue into what I focus on, which is gold and silver, is, they're going ballistic right now. But one of the things that I'm citing as a potential issue for gold and silver is a stock market crash. Because if you look back to 2020 or 2008, the stock market crash pulled down the metals, but thereafter they took off. So I would think of it as a gift. Just to want to make that point in case I forgot it later. So with regard to the stock market, I would call it cautious, nervous. I think the gains on the upside are far less than the potential losses on the downside. And my two cents on this is I'd expect like a 20, 30% correction in the S&P to somewhere around 3,500, 4,000 from whatever peak it makes. And therefore, thereafter, the Fed steps in, obviously, and they start cutting rates and they revert to QE. And that will push equities higher again. And why do I say that? Because you got an election in November. And whoever's in charge, and it's Biden right now, he's going to want that market looking good going into the November election. Because if there's anything that'll bring down an incumbent, it's a recession. And a stock market correct a cash crash or correction, significant correction would certainly help with that. So my two cents is short term 20, 30% drop, but then the Fed responds that it all as it always does, and the market goes up, and then we get the election, and whoever's elected, that's not the issue. But for gold and silver, they take off. I do believe that after the election, stocks are going to get hammered. And I think there's going to be a sharp correction. Once the election is over, and whoever is in office, be it Trump, Biden, Obama, after a few months, I expect the stock market to drop precipitously because of what's going on in the economy and elsewhere in the world. We can get into some of those things. The stress in the banking sector, wars breaking out, none of which are very good for the economy. And they'll all eventually bring down the most overvalued stock market we've seen perhaps since the Great Depression.
Okay, lots to wade through there. Real quick on your last point there, after the election, if there's a market crack, large market correction, like you just said, you said you could see a correction before the elections of 20 to 30% in the S&P that gets rescued to try to prop things up for the election. But the second market correction you're talking about seems like you think it's going to be a bigger correction. What ballpark magnitude are you thinking when you say that?
Let's say we get to 5,500 to 6,000. I'm looking for 1,000.
Okay, so that's pretty big. That's like an 80% ballpark, 75, 80%.
Yeah, similar to what happened in the Great Depression. Look, the people in charge, I don't think they're the most creative people. They see what worked before and they do it again. And I think we had a 94% correction in when the 1929, 1930, from top to bottom. So I do see that we could get at least an 80% correction this time around. And with inflation at the same time, and I should say stagflation, maybe the term that I coined, I think 3, 4 years ago, hyperstagflation, we could see stocks be at 1,000, but in real terms, they've dropped maybe 95% because inflation's gone up. And the nominal value has gone down to 1,000, but the real value is somewhere around, 300, 400.
Okay. Wow. All right. That is a big prediction. And explains why you focus on precious metals, because in that type of environment, I would assume precious metals are one of the best ways to protect your wealth. And maybe there's even opportunity to experience real gains in that environment too. But I presume you start from a position of wealth protection.
Yes, but it's wealth protection, Financial insurance, as I call it, but you could make a lot of money in the process as well.
Okay. All right. Well, look,
And
we're going to get into that, but let me just dial some a few things back here, just to make sure I got it all right. And there's a few things I want to dig into again at this sort of high level macro stuff. So, you are saying, like a number of other people on this channel, hey, if you're just looking at the headline, the financial headlines, and listening to, what Powell and the other Fed speakers tell us, you're not getting the full story. In fact, maybe you're getting a deceptive story, right? That we're being told everything's great. This is a Goldilocks economy. I just heard the term the other day, platinum locks economy, that some are trying to say even better than
That
Goldilocks.
works.
Yeah, you're saying decidedly not so. You're cautious about the markets, which we'll get into a little bit more in more detail, but you've already kind of dropped the punchline, which is you can see just sort of a massive evisceration of value in the markets going forward over the next year. But let's talk about how your approach. You said, look, I don't just look at the headline GDP number, the headline unemployment numbers, or take Powell at face value. I open the hood, I muck around, and I look in the real data that I'm assuming you say gives you a better sense of what's happening in the true economy. So you mentioned things like bankruptcies. You mentioned things like auto repos, credit card debt levels, the cost of that debt, both of which are at records right now, record high credit card debt, record high APRs, delinquencies. Can you tell us what you're seeing in terms of this sort of bankruptcy, repo, delinquency side of the story? Because that does tend to be an early indicator of trouble in the markets, right? As we would, or trouble in the economy, as we would expect to see those things start to rise and then spike, heading, say, into a recession. Are you seeing signs of that?
So I focus on, I just look at the numbers. The bankruptcies. Corporate bankruptcies have soared. You just have to go, Google it, and you'll see the numbers. And now we're seeing individual bankruptcies soar as well. Now that's, two signs that trouble is afoot. Auto loan defaults are another one. And these are the things that we saw back in 2007 and 2000. And they're happening again. But the reason why I point these out, as opposed to what you're getting, in terms of the official data, the big numbers, is you've got the Fed chair saying that everything is great, everything is fine, the economy is strong. I couldn't disagree more. And we didn't even get into the labor market, which they say is strong. And yet, Gavin Newsom ra raised the minimum wage in California just the other day. And the fast food joints that employ all these part-time workers, they're all getting laid off. And you're seeing the big monopolies, the Amazons and so forth, which are doing relatively well. They've been shedding people for quite some time now, in the past year or two. And I don't see any improvement. So when I look at the details as opposed to the numbers that we're getting, the GDP, the ISM actually is not looking good either. It was recently, but now it's turning south again. I don't see a lot of things that are positive right now. I don't. I mean, if you throw me say bankruptcies or auto loan defaults or something else, I'll answer the question, but nearly everyone is negative as far as I can see.
Okay,
And
so you
it's
are
all out
really,
there, it's available.
yeah. So you are really seeing the difference. I sometimes equate this to watching the TV and having the meteorologist telling you that it's sunny skies, but you're looking out your window and you're seeing that it's raining, and there's just this cognitive disconnect, right?
That's perfect. That's a perfect analogy right there. Yes. It happens
All
all
right.
the time in Canada, by the way. We're going to get two
Okay.
tornadoes tomorrow. Nothing happened. But anyway.
All right. I guess in Canada, yeah, they're telling you. I mean, it's not rain, maybe we'll say snow. You talked about the labor market, and I've spent my fair share talking about this on this program, which is that's one where the disconnect between the data and people's just regular experience just really seems to be a huge disconnect. We're told that it's one of the best job markets ever, and there's way more openings than there are applicants, and that anybody who can fog a mirror can get a job. At the same time, we're seeing the spike in layoffs across all industries at this point in time. Certainly, same thing with job freezes and hours cut back and all the things that you would expect to see heading into a weaker labor market. At the same time, we're looking at the, we get the payroll numbers, and they're always a massive beat, right, versus expectations. Of course, at the same time, they're revising everything else historically, right? So they're just, even on the surface, there seems to be a real shell game coming on, right? Which is, believe this month's numbers, forget about what we told you last month, that was all wrong, but believe this month's numbers, and then of course next month we're just going to rinse, wash, and repeat all this, right? Then the initial claims numbers, if you look at them, they're like flat as a pancake. Right, these things are holding out around historic lows. They hardly ever move. At the same time, things like WARN notices, are skyrocketing. And so you're looking at these data sets and you're saying, wait a minute, like they can't both be true, right now. And it makes you wonder, okay, look, are they trying to deceive us? Is this lipstick on the pig? Is this just trying to keep things looking good heading into an election? Or I talked to consumer analyst Neely Tamminga a little while ago, who talks to the BLS pretty frequently, and her take is, during COVID, we fired tens of millions of people overnight, practically, and then we scrambled to hire them all back, and that created like this bullwhip effect in the data sets. And so she's basically just saying it blew up all their models, and it's just taking a long time for their models to get back to any sort of predicted validity. So we're still in that period, interim period, where it's all just kind of junk. I honestly don't know the answer, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Well, going back to the payrolls, because that's a key one. Back in December, I did an analysis of all the actual payroll results relative to the expectations, and then which and the revisions for the prior month. And I found a strange statistic. Out of all 16, I just took 16 months, the past 16 months, 15 times out of 16, the payrolls were revised down the following month, substantially. Think about that for a second. 15 out of 16 revised down. And then I did a cumulative total of what the actual was and what the revised number down was versus the one number that was announced. It was 40% less than the actual number. I was like, how could you be that wrong over a period of 16 months?
That
That
consistently,
just,
yeah.
yes, and that told me everything I needed to know. I could send it to you. I haven't got it in front of me right now, but that's all I needed to know. That when you ask about what's the veracity of these numbers, I'll just give you this spreadsheet and then you tell me.
Okay, so it sounds like you're maybe more in the camp of lipstick on the pig. This is sort of an intentional smokescreen to try to keep
Yes.
us feeling better than things actually are.
Exactly. Ben Bernanke once said, it's not our job to tell the truth, it's to maintain confidence. I rest my
Sure.
case.
It's also, oh God, was it Juncker from the ECB who had the famous, when it gets serious, you have to lie quote?
Exactly. Well said.
Yeah,
Yes, that's another one.
and David, you haven't had a chance to watch this yet, because the day we're filming this is the same day that my interview with former Fed exec Thomas Hoennig just came out. Fascinating interview. In fact, folks watching, I would now venture to say it's sort of essential watching for the Thoughtful Money audience to really understand how things are going on. So Thomas Hoennig, you're probably familiar, David, but he sat as a voting member on the FOMC. He was the CEO of the St. Louis Fed. He sat as a voting member of the FOMC, and he set a record for dissenting votes in 2010, I think, when Bernanke was trying to get everybody to approve QE. He was the lone dissenting voice, and at a time that the Fed really wanted unanimity, he was a real thorn in Bernanke's side because he kept voting no against this for all the reasons that you, I think, would have voted no in the same place. And in that interview, you know, I asked him point blank with as little bias as I could have of just, hey, what's your opinion of how the Fed is run and the way it makes decisions? And honestly, David, he just validated all of my worst assumptions about the dysfunctional decision making at the Fed and the pressure that it's under from all these other parties, Congress, Wall Street, et cetera, the short term focus and angle to decision making, the act first for optics sake and then try to figure it all out later. That'll be someone else's problem. All these things that we've thought were going on, hearing from a guy who was at the table, literally in the room, was fascinating and depressing at the same time. But I think it, you hear that and it's hard not to develop perspectives like yours where, hey, this is just window dressing to keep us, you know, happy and docile. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right.
I just wanted to add something to that, Adam, is that you have to remember the Fed was created to smooth the cycles. Instead, it's the boom bust bank. We'll wait till everything goes to hell in a handbasket and then we'll jump in to save it. And then we'll pump it up again and then it crashes and then we save it. That's not what it was built for.
Actually started the conversation with Hanning about, so why was the Fed created? Like, what's its reason for being? And it really was started, actually not so much to smooth things out, but to be a crisis breakpoint, right? Which is like a buffer, right? Which is the lender of last resort. Hey, we're going into a liquidity crisis or whatnot. Okay, no one else is lending to anybody else. All right, the Fed's going to step in and keep things going so that the whole system doesn't freeze up, right? But then it experienced mission creep, right? They began realizing all the things they could do. And it's gotten to the point, like you said, and we talked about this directly, where the Fed, Congress, everybody, the administration, everybody wants eternal summer, right? Yes. Nobody wants the season of winter to arrive anymore, right? They want to get rid of the business cycle, not smooth things out. They literally just want it to be boom all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Which of course is unsustainable, which of course builds up so many pressures that by the time the bust overwhelms their defenses to try to keep it away, it's much bigger and much more painful and damaging than it otherwise would have been. So you're exactly right. But it's interesting how it started as just this break glass in case of emergency mechanism. And it's now become this thing that essentially runs the whole world. You know, I don't know anybody else that the world hangs on every word as much as they do of Jerome Powell.
Yeah, because he's at the controls. Compare what the Fed has done since inception versus the gold standard prior to it. And you get your answer right. The greatest prosperity under a gold standard because it smooths things out automatically. Mm-hmm. The Fed is causing this. You can see the boom bust. You just run the recession chart on Fred and it's right there.
I felt very informative and material that Dr. Hoenig lamented the loss of the gold standard and said, look, it's got its costs. He said, I'm not necessarily becoming a champion of returning to the gold standard exactly as we had it. Mm-hmm. But he said it was the discipline in the system. And he said, without it, as you would expect, everybody just took it in whatever direction they wanted to.
Yeah, it was automatic. And what did we change it to? Humans were controlling it. And humans are flawed. You know, we can make bad decisions, we can make good ones, but there's no bias in the gold standard. There is bias in Fed policy. And as you alluded to, there are other people involved as well who apply pressure one way or the other, which may not necessarily be good for the economy long term. Whereas if you have an automatic system like the gold standard, it's automatic. You just leave it alone, it does its thing, and you know, you get the greatest prosperity in history. I mean, we could go on all day about this, Adam. I think it's very self-evident what's going on.
It is. And even again, just the last point on Honig is I asked him at the very end of the discussion, well, what's your outlook for the dollar and other fiat currencies? And he basically said, if we don't change our trajectory, and asterisk, don't see us changing our trajectory, anytime soon, these are just going to continue to lose, purchasing power ad infinitum. So, this thing, the current trajectory has an expiration date on it, and something is going to have to replace the current fiat system. This may not, we might be talking about something that happens in 70 years, David, but it's something that could happen a lot sooner too. We just really don't know. But the point is the math of the current system just says we're going to have some a different monetary regime at some point because the current one is just asymptotically headed to zero.
Yeah,
All right, so
it's unsustainable, Adam. For me, the key barometer is for every dollar debt that we generate, we generate less than a dollar in GDP.
right.
That is unsustainable, period. The end. Over.
So you're in good company on that. Another Federal Reserve note or connection. Former senior economist to the Federal Reserve, Lacey Hunt, keynoted Thoughtful Money's conference last month and talks about exactly that, that the government is a negative multiplier at this point in time, the government borrowing.
Exactly. It's a drag on the economy. Yes.
Right. And of course, we're doing more of it, right? It's almost like the guy that says, well, my company's, I'm losing money per widget, but I'm going to make it up on volume, right? You just
Yeah.
can't do it.
What's the definition of insanity?
Right.
Doing the
It's
same
what?
thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome.
Right. And I would say we're even more insane because we're doing more of what's not working, right? We keep catching up
Exactly.
every time, right? So,
Oh,
yeah,
God.
$34 trillion in debt, adding a new trillion every 100 days or less now going forward. So, all right. So, okay. So I think we've set the macro, setting here. Real quick, you talked about hyperstagflation at some point, and I know that that is your that's probably the hyper part of that stagflation is probably highly driven by the response that you expect the central banks and the fiscal authorities to issue once we get into the post-election massive crash that you're predicting. Before we get to that stage, what's your sense on inflation, say, for the rest of the year? This is probably the subject I have the most difference on with the experts that I interview. I'd say roughly half of them think inflation's sticky, and there's a lot of secular reasons why inflation's going to remain elevated and be hard for the Fed to get under control. I have the other half saying disinflation is in the driver's seat, and we're going to be below 2% inflation in a year. So where do you fall out on that? Again, separate from massive rescue efforts from the central planners.
No, I'm not playing politics here because I've said this before way back in 2020 when COVID hit, because I believe it's both. You're going to get disinflation or deflation in luxury goods, discretionary items, whereas necessities like food, gas, those things are going to skyrocket. So I expect hyperinflation in necessities, and I expect disinflation or deflation in almost everything else. And that
Okay.
includes real estate, anything you want, but you don't need.
So square that circle with me for a second, because I was assuming that real estate might be in the necessities bucket, because you need a roof over your head. Square that circle, and I get it. In other words, in
Yeah.
real estate prices are currently at about the most unaffordable levels they've ever been. So.
Yeah, that's why we were talking earlier on about stocks and relative to gold and silver. And the reason why I focus on gold and silver almost exclusively is I think they're going to go into a bubble going forward. And because of what's going to happen to the system, loss of confidence, we'll get into that later. And the fate of the dollar. By contrast, I expect stocks, bonds, the dollar, real estate are all overvalued and they're all going to go south. So that's my perspective. Maybe I shouldn't have thrown it into the discretionary sense, because as you're right, people need a home to live in. I'm renting.
But you don't need a second home. You don't need a short-term rental. I mean, there's a lot of inventory that's owned out there that isn't essential, you know, for living.
Look, my Irishness is often a negative thing with me, because I tell it like it is, and sometimes it gets me into trouble, but I do put my money where my mouth is. And I had three properties. I sold them all in the past 3 years, and we're renting. And I can afford to buy a property tomorrow, but I choose not to, because that's my outlook for the real estate market. And when I see what's happening in the commercial real estate market, which is usually the first to go, and then I see what's happening with the median sale price right now in the United States falling faster than 2008, and there's no headlines about this. I think I'm in the right seat in a rental. And that's why I think, if I'm right, you're going to see a big short kind of situation, where it gets worse slowly, 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 gradually. Then all of a sudden, bang, all the foot for sale sales go up, and the prices go down the toilet. And that may not happen until after the election, because that's when I think that the economy will be in severe trouble, and QE will not be able to bring it back, because unemployment will increase, bankruptcies are already increasing. Small businesses are disappearing, the biggest employers. At the same time, the Fed is printing money trying to prop it up. That's rampant inflation. If you have more money chasing the same or fewer goods and services, the price must go up. And if they're really pushing it, you're going to get hyperinflation. My primary focus with regard to that statement, hyperstagflation, is in necessities, because you need to buy them, and everybody's going to be chasing them, and there's more money going to be printed at the same time. But there's going to be disinflation in discretionary items, especially luxury items. You're already seeing it in Rolexes.
They've been calling it a luxury recession, that's already happening in a lot of these big brands. All right, so let me clarify a few things. Okay, first you said that you expect the markets may fall by as much as 20, maybe even 30% prior to the election. And what do you see as the trigger for that? Is that just the lag effects are finally catching up with us, this under the hood, you know, danger signs that you've seen? It's just a general weakening economy, and then they're just going to do whatever they can, throw the kitchen sink in it to keep things okay enough for the election.
The way I look at these markets, all of them, is using five pests. It's fundamentals, intermarket analysis, positioning, Elliott Wave, sentiment, and technicals. So I don't know what the specific trigger is going to be, but I know what signals will tell me that it's happening. So if we break that trend line that's going up in the S&P right now, that's a warning. If we break 5,000, then it's an even bigger warning. If the yield curve turn goes from negative to positive, which I call the hockey stick, which signaled the meltdown in 2000, and in 2007, if it hits again, you have to respect it. And there are other signals that are outside my mind. But basically, I'm looking at triggers that tell me that the price is going south. And if you look at things like in the technicals, look at the technical charts for the S&P and the NASDAQ in particular. Look how overbought it is. Look at sentiment. Everybody's bullish. And yet there's only six stocks really driving all of the gains, which is that is a clear sign of trouble. And the other ones I just mentioned. So I will wait to see it break. I will not try to anticipate, but I'll know it when I see it.
Okay, so we have, again, following your anticipated script, Lag effect starts really expressing itself. Economy starts visibly slowing. Markets start correcting. The authorities rush to the rescue under a ton of pressure to keep things patched up for the election. So maybe stocks bounce back up again. We get to the election, and then here's the question I've been waiting to ask you. So then you expect post the election this massive washout, and that could be due to just the authorities tried to patch the dam. They put on whatever duct tape they could to hold things together till the election, but it's not enough, and the dam breaks, right? Part of it could be, let's assume for a second that the current administration wins, that Biden wins. Part of it might be, hey, look, okay, we've been doing all these extraordinary measures to keep things patched up until the election. We can't do them forever. Let's let them, get released now, right? Let's let the excesses play out, because we still have 4 years left. Like, we can hopefully patch this up in year two or three, and we can end strong, right? Now, if Trump wins, he may make a very similar decision. Well, geez, yeah, this thing's been held together with shoestring and bubble gum. Let me let it all break. I get 2 years to blame Biden for it, right? I'm squeaky clean. This wasn't my fault. It was all this guy. And hopefully I'll have it fixed up in my third and fourth year, and I'll end strong, right? So there seems, I think, to be a lot of potential political will to allow a correction to finally happen at that point in time. Curious to hear your thoughts on that. And then my question is, if that's the will, then at what point, like, could it be longer before everybody rushes to the rescue to really kick off the hyperstagflation part? Because they're kind of being told, hey, let this thing wash out.
Now, the way I see it, you said it correctly, but let me repeat it in my own words. In the short term, if we get a stock market crash, which correction, I will say, significant correction, which could happen overnight, which is what I expect, and that could happen tomorrow, it could happen next month, 2 months from now. And then the Fed will step in with rate cuts and QE. They'll pump the markets back up in time for the election. And personally, I think it's not a political bias one way or the other. I think Trump's going to win, and then he's left with a propped up market. And my forecast for his presidency, or even if it's Biden's, is that you're going to see a economic the problems with the economy become obvious. And the Fed's already pumped up the markets and tried to support the economy, and it isn't working. And finally, it rolls over, and it rolls the person who's in office when it rolls over, when the depression, if it is a depression, materializes, the person who's in office is who is blamed, which I think is ridiculous. I put it this way. That's like being the last person to go to a party and yet being blamed for the mess thereafter. Somebody else caused the mess beforehand. You just showed up at the end. So my two cents is that the stock market drops, the Fed responds, markets go back up, Trump gets elected, and then maybe it's a few months, maybe it's a year. The economy goes south, markets go south. The Fed tries to support the market again, but this time it doesn't work. All and then they pull the plug because they realize all that they're doing is creating inflation. They're not actually doing anything materially to support the economy or the stock market. Said differently, the stock market keeps going down as the Fed's printing money.
Okay. That I totally get all that. There's one entity that you didn't mention that I'd love to get your thoughts on, which is the Treasury, right? Which is one thing that's different now, perhaps, versus previous cycles of this that have happened in the past, is we sort of crossed a Rubicon, I believe, during COVID with the direct payments to households, right? We've set a precedent that during tough times, We're not going to let the Fed do monetary policy and wait for it to trickle through the economy and then eventually hopefully make people's lives better. We're going to send them money now. And, politicians got super praised for that in the moment when it was happening, right? Now people maybe in retrospect are, I don't know if everybody's connecting that to the, I'm sure far too few people are connecting those checks to the inflation that we then suffered. But my thesis is that when the next downturn hits, not only will Congress people be demanding, hey, let's give checks to people because obviously it makes them look good, but their constituents are going to be begging for it. Hey, you sent us checks last time, send us more, right? So how will that impact things? Because that is more directly stimulative, and it's also way more inflationary than anything the Fed does.
Yeah, but that's essentially UBI, or a
A
variation on the
variation of,
theme.
yeah. So do you expect this? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but
Yes,
do you
I
expect
do.
something like this?
Yes, I do. And I expect that you're going to have to sign up for their central bank digital currency to get it. And when that happens, it's like we saw during COVID, and the people are watching Netflix night, noon, and morning while you're eating Cheerios and collecting their checks. You're basically, I consider it like a hose of the paper money being sprayed all over the economy. But nothing has been generated to warrant those dollars. Basically, you're not investing it in the economy. You're not creating new services, new industries. You're not, creating anything. You've got your existing goods and services, and then you just throw a whole wad of dollars, paper dollars, on top of that. What happens to prices? Prices are going to skyrocket. And how long can you do that? If you look back at every hyperinflationary instance like Zimbabwe, or the one I like is Weimar Germany, that's what you're getting into. You're turning into a banana republic is by basically just giving money away. And if they do give out UBI, will it be indexed to inflation? I doubt it. Everybody will welcome it, but you won't be able to buy a can of Coke with your $10,000. So I think that's a road we don't want to go down in my opinion, because that's a recipe for disaster. But unfortunately, I think that's where they're going to go. I think you're right. It's they started direct payments, and when the proverbial hits the fan, the politicians are going to give the people what they want, and that's going to be direct payments, i.e., UBI, and you'll have to get your digital certificate and sign up for central bank digital currency to get it. That's my two cents on it. I could be wrong, but that's honestly, I believe that's what's coming. And that's why next year, or after the election, when the economy is going south and they start giving out checks and the Fed's printing, look at the debt and deficits in the US already today and the rate at which they're increasing. Can you imagine what's going to happen when they start doing that after the election? What number brings down the entire system? Is it 40 trillion, 50 trillion, 100 trillion, 200 trillion? At what point does this stop? I mean, it's unsustainable. At what point, I mean, our foreign buyers of treasuries are already getting, turning away from the bonds because they see what's happening. You're basically getting something that could turn out to be worthless in a year or two from now with all the money printing and handouts. Like the fiscal spending and the direct payments during COVID. That's a recipe for disaster, absolute disaster. So what is the number? What's the magic number? And I believe that we did talk about this, Adam, but again, my wheelhouse is gold and silver. But why is gold and silver skyrocketing while the dollar and 10-year yields are skyrocketing? Well, not skyrocketing, I will say rallying off their lows. Explain that to me.
Things that tend to be precious metals negative, right? So gold is silver are strengthening into this headwind. Yes.
And the two biggest markets in the world are the foreign exchange market and the bond market. So which dictates the other? Obviously, the dollar and the bond market dictate to gold and silver. Yet gold and silver are turning their nose up at the rise in the dollar and 10-year yields. So what gives? It's either two things, in my opinion. There is a big buyer of gold and silver, and it could be the Chinese, it could be the Indians, it could be the Russians. Or people have lost confidence in the dollar and the 10-year yield, bonds, US policies. They're moving away. They see what's happening. They're concerned about a potential banking crisis as well. Do they leave their cash in the bank, or do I put it in something that will hold value and I can hold it in my hand, so there's no counterparty risk? I think there's a little of both. And I think that the confidence is the one that they should be scared about, because once you lose confidence in the dollar, the bonds, stocks, the system, government, what happens next? Unfortunately, I don't want to be doom and gloom. I'm Irish. I just tell it like I see it. I'm a realist, but unfortunately, that's what I see. I'm watching what's going on, and now I'm seeing gold and silver literally skyrocketing. And now I understand that it's been suppressed for so long, but why now? And why when dollar and the 10-year yield are going up? Either it's a big player coming in, driving the precious metals higher, because it's not retail. Or people are not just the retail, but the big players are losing confidence in the US, in its policies, in its currency, in its bond market. They're moving away. At the very least, they're hedging against the risk of a weaker dollar and a bond. And that's something that people should be scared about, because the where that goes is not a happy place.
Okay,
And
and
sorry, go
sorry,
ahead.
I was just going to say, and even if everything that you have just mentioned sort of remains status quo from here, like there's no more additional concerns that force people to buy gold, if the script plays out the way that you think it will, where the monetary and fiscal authorities really step in with the measures you think they're going to take, all of that is incredibly gold supportive too, correct?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It's inflation, money printing, fiscal spending, the loss of confidence, wars. We haven't even talked about Ukraine
Right.
and Gaza, the Middle East,
Okay. But
potentially
sorry to interrupt,
Taiwan.
but how you basically the weaponization of the dollar and the financial system against Russia woke up a lot of other countries to their vulnerability, where they need to say, geez, I got to have my assets in something that's a little less, confiscatable, or a little less, that could be turned off on me overnight, right? So that's one more reason the rest of the world, sovereign wise, may be buying gold right now.
And if Russia and China are such good buddies, they've got to be saying to us, why do we need the dollar in the middle of our trade? Why can't we just trade with one another? Whether it's rubles, yuan, gold, silver, we don't need the dollar. I'll buy from you, you buy from me, I'll give you oil, you give me this. The weaponization of the dollar, I don't know whether it was deliberate or it was a mistake, but the effects it had were momentous, because monumental, because Russia, it sent a message not just to Russia but to all the other countries that you can't trust the US to honor its commitments in terms of the 300 billion that the Russians lost. And the movement, the hedging that the Chinese have been doing for years now, not only are they the biggest producer of gold in the world, they're the biggest buyer on the open market. And their official gold holdings are nonsense. They're far, far higher than they're actually. Why? Why are central banks around the world loading up on gold at record pace? And why is the dollar looking so sickly?
Okay, great questions. I personally don't have the answers to them, but I think you're the way you're
It's a
speculating.
rhetorical one, Adam. It's a
Yep.
rhetorical one.
Well, look, I'm just realizing that I've got way more questions than we have time left, so I want to
Okay.
zero in on your area of expertise here, which is the precious metals. So for somebody who is listening to you and saying, "All right, David, this makes a lot of sense. I guess I should get myself some exposure to the precious metals at this point in time." How would you recommend they go about thinking about that in today's market at today's prices? Should they worry that the metals have already made a big move? You know, some questions are going to be, hey, have already just missed the move. I'm assuming you think it's still got a lot more room to run ahead of it. I do want to preface all this by acknowledging too that you put your money where your mouth is. You were very public about going quote unquote all in on silver back at the beginning of February. Obviously, if that was a trade, I'm not sure if it was, but it's one that's paid off well for you since then. But what do you expect to happen from here price-wise with these guys? And again, how would you encourage somebody thinking about increasing their exposure to do so?
Well, great questions because I talk to gardeners, I talk to contractors, talk to my plumber, and I've been saying this for the past 2, 3 years that you should start buying physical silver. You don't have to buy it all at once, and most people don't have the wealth to do so in size. But you can still buy a silver coin. In Canada, it's around 40. I'm sure it's around 30 in the US, and just stack a little bit every week. And I would recommend that because people who are not in tune with this market or not au fait with it or not knowledgeable, they trying to buy the lowest point or sell at the highest point is not in their nature. Human nature is that you buy high and sell low, when the exact opposite is what you should be doing. When the market goes down, they get fed up, they throw up their hands, throw in the towel, and they sell. No whams, the market goes up. When it goes up, they get super excited, party time, let's break out the champagne. What happens? Goes in the opposite direction. My recommendation is that people should just buy a little every week. Just stack it up on average, because in answer to your previous comment, not only do I think that this rally is in its infancy, I think it's going way, way higher. I think it's going to go into a bubble because of everything else that's going on the other side. Because everybody's going to scramble. It's not just going to be like in the 70s where it was like the stagflation. There's going to be a bigger issue associated with what's going on with the economy, the stock market, real estate, bonds, and so forth, and a general loss of confidence. And this is global. I mean, we know this already. You're seeing the scenes in China where there's like crowds outside gold dealers and they're trying to buy it. And then they show up when the next inventory shows up to clean it out again. And they'll sleep overnight in lines to do so. China knows what's going on.
And
They follow the
sorry, sorry, sorry to
smartly.
interrupt, but do you expect that type of consumer demand to happen at some point in the precious metal space here?
Yes, I do. And that's why you want to get ahead of it. Now, I don't say it's going to happen tomorrow, but it could. But it certainly did happen in the 70s. My dad was telling me that, they'd look on TV and you'd see there was lines around the block. And then I worked for people in the corporate sector who actually personally experienced it themselves. This is in Europe. So it's not just an Asian thing, this is Europe too.
Yeah, and I just want to contribute one quick story here where a fellow who I've interviewed in past years, who was a gold dealer and has been in doing it for 50 years, his stories of the like 1980, very similar, you know, lines around the block. If you go into a coin shop these days, highly likely to be the only person there, right? But back then, he'd show up line around the block, and what he'd have to do is he'd have to divide the line into sellers and buyers, let the sellers in first, so he would actually have inventory to then sell to the buyers because inventory had gotten so tight, right?
Exactly. But in the lines I was talking about, my father was talking about back then, everybody was a buyer, or they were trying to buy it,
Yeah, and if sellers didn't show up, maybe the line was told early in the day, sorry, we're out, right?
No, I do, Adam. I do see that playing out. But for the people that are watching, yes, they call it stacking, but just simply buying a little every day. And it's not difficult. You just look up at a well-known dealer, give them a call, they will walk you through it, and just buy a little every week or every month. And At the very least, it's insurance against something bad happening. If it doesn't happen, great, you still have it. But I don't want to throw out numbers because I find that I like baby steps, going to the knee. I have a big picture in mind, but I focus on the baby steps to that point. I'm not interested in what people's forecasts are, a year out, 10 years out, but I will say that I think that silver in particular is going to do extremely well. I believe it's often quoted as the most undervalued asset on earth today. Gold will do extremely well, but silver is going to go ballistic. I'll give you a couple of stats on that one. From 1974 to 1980, gold went up 24x, silver went up 37x. From 2000 to 2011, gold went up 8x, silver went up 12x. There's no reason why this doesn't happen again. And actually, even more so. So, there's a Gary Savage has said this publicly, so I'll repeat it. He said that he believes $100 silver is just a starting point for what happens next. And I tend to agree with him.
Wow. Okay. So, and for folks, they were recording this, silver's around $27 an ounce. And that's actually a pretty big move from where it was, a week or two prior. But
Yeah, when I went
you're
all in, it
basically,
was $22.50, $22. That
that
was,
was back at the beginning of February.
Feb. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, so it's even moved a fair amount since February, but you're
Yeah.
saying it haven't really got started yet. Okay. If I took good notes, I heard you say that if you are, well, whether you're feeling like you've already missed this initial run, or whether you're just looking to position yourself well for the big move that you're talking about, that precious metals investors may get a real gift, which in the moment might not feel like one, but you're saying it is, which is if we get that 20 to 30% stock market correction that you mentioned earlier, we tend to see what happens if markets correct quickly. We didn't see this happen so much in 2022, one because that was a very gradual market correction. But if they start correcting fast enough that people start getting margin calls, then you just sell any asset. Sometimes you're forced to sell any asset that has retained its value. And so we oftentimes see the precious metals drop at the beginning of a violent market correction because they're just kind of getting pulled down to the vortex with everything, but then they tend to recover early. And if it's something related to a real crisis, then the safety trade begins to really kick into effect, and the precious metals tend to rebound pretty well. So I believe what you're saying is if you can anticipate that washout and have dry capital available and be able to deploy it at lower prices during the washout, you may get the opportunity to ride that recovery if it indeed happens. Am I describing the opportunity correctly?
Yes, but I would recommend that people start buying now. Don't try to time it. But if and when that stock market correction occurs, which I believe it will, then load up at that point because that's going to be a gift. If you look back in 2008, QE1 didn't start until March 2009. Gold bottomed in October of 2008, 6 months ahead of that. It was, I don't know, it's able to predict the future. I don't know, but it knew. Fast forward to 2020, when we had March, they call it the lockdown reversal, but I call it the repo crash. And stock market had a big dump, so did gold. 4 weeks later, gold was heading up to new record highs. It was on its way there. My point is, when it happens this time, after those two previous events, unless you're suffering from amnesia, you will understand that when it falls this time, people are going to grab it almost immediately because they know what happens next. The Fed's going to come in with rate cuts and QE. And if it's not tomorrow, it'll be a week or 2 weeks or a month next. They know it's coming. Gold and silver know it's coming, are the buyers of gold, and they will jump all over it. And then it's gone. So I think you won't get 6 months this time. You won't get 4 weeks. You might get a day or two. And then it'll
Okay.
drop and then straight and then off goes.
Got it. So you've got to be positioned in advance in case you miss that window, you still have your stake. But obviously, if you have your some dry powder, you may want to be watching real closely during that washout to deploy quickly in case it's a blink and you miss it type of correction, like you're saying.
Yeah, I like to say buy 50% right away on the first drop. And then, if you get a deeper drop, you got 50% to buy the remainder. Or if it goes back up and actually exceeds the prior high from which it fell from, just buy the other 50% because the market's all—it's just going to run away. And so, either way, it works. And
Okay.
you, one's a more one approach is more aggressive than the other. But
Okay.
yes, stock market crash, great gift to buy. But I do recommend that people start stacking in small amounts now, especially the person who doesn't live and breathe this, because you're not going to be waiting to watch to see and then see a stock market crash. And then you forget, like, say it's 4 weeks from now, they've forgotten that, oh, yeah, that guy, Adam or David, told me to buy that, you know, and then they miss it. You just keep buying because it's just going to keep going up,
Yeah,
in
and
my opinion.
one thing I tell people is if we get the kind of environment that you're thinking of that eventually is going to happen, right? The massive market crash, the hyper stagflation and whatnot. Let's say that you have only at that point in time been able to amass a handful of ounces of gold or, 100 ounces of silver or whatnot, right? Yeah, it would have been great if you could have amassed more. But you're going to own more gold and silver in physical ounces than 99.9% of people out there, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, you're better off than the next guy or everybody on your street because you're the only guy who has 10 silver coins.
Right.
What have they got?
Job then will be to make sure nobody knows that you own them, but you own them.
Yeah, be an Irish farmer. Yes. You know, they their house looks like it's going to be demolished on the outside. You walk in and it's a palace. But anyway.
All right. Yeah, the Irish farmer, the original gray man. All right. Well, look, I'm lamenting that we're at the end of the time here. One question that I do need to ask you before we start to wrap things up is, so far you've been talking about the metals themselves, and in fact, we've just been talking about buying physical metals. What are your thoughts about the mining stocks, right? Which tend to provide a leveraged return on what happens with the metals. They've been really disappointing for a long while. They've been widow makers. But that being said, you talk to veterans and in rare moments past when this sector is really caught on fire, you have gargantuan crypto-like returns. What are your thoughts about the miners and in playing what you expect to transpire from here?
Yeah, I've already recommended to my subscribers high beta miners that I've identified, and they have done extremely well. Some are up 80% in the past few weeks, and I expect that to continue. There will be pullbacks along the way, but the only issue from a gains perspective and from a price perspective, miners are definitely the way to go. The only two concerns I have with miners is that one, say they take off and you're up 200, 300%. So what does that mean? Okay, then you're going to have to sell it. Well, what do you get when you sell it? Dollars.
Dollars.
The very thing that you're trying to protect yourself from, worthless dollars. So that's not a good idea. That's why in my portfolio, I'm heavily weighted on the physical metals. I have a trading account of maybe 20% for the miners, just to add juice to the portfolio. The second issue I have is if things are as bad as I expect them to turn out to be, and I hope I'm wrong, I'll say that out loud. But if they are as bad as I think they're going to be, what do you think the governments of these countries are going to do when they're in dire straits from a financial perspective? In my opinion,
Confiscatory taxes. Yeah.
they nationalize the miners. They take them over. They need the gold. They need the silver. They just take them. And then what are you going to get? You're probably going to, if even if they give you a good price, you're going to get paid in dollars. So that's the concern I have with long term with miners. Certainly in the short term, a great vehicle to make short gains if it goes your way. But if you're thinking long term, you want to be in the physical metals. You may not make as much in the short term or even the longer term, but at the end of the day, that's what you want because it's a store of value. You can hold it in your hand and you can actually use it for trade. I've bought shipping containers with silver here in Canada because the guy selling to me wanted bullion. I didn't offer it up. He said, okay, I'll send these to you and I'll give you a 20% discount if you give it to me in silver. Okay.
Wow.
It's happening already, Adam. People are trading in physical precious metals.
Which isn't crazy because it is money. I mean, even here in the
Yes.
States, constitutionally, it is money. All right. So, what I think I hear you say there, just to clarify for people, is hey, miners may be a great way to make some gains in this type of environment, but you got to be cognizant of what form those gains are in. And I guess I would hear you say, if you are being successful in investing in miners, make sure you take your gains and convert them into some sort of harder asset for the type of future. So you're nodding as I'm saying this.
Yeah.
Okay, and then one other thing to note real quick on this is when you talk to people who have lived through, some of these bubbles in the precious metals in the past, and real manias where fear is not FOMO, but real fear is driving people, right? Is these are not large markets relative to stocks and bonds, right? And so it doesn't take a lot of money going into them to dry up the inventory. I think silver is actually a really good example of this. And we've seen this in our lifetime, David. I'm sure you've seen it, in over the past 10 years, there have been times where there's silver's gotten hot, and then all of a sudden the premiums go through the roof and the waiting times go through the roof, where they tell you, like, sure, I'll sell you a coin today, but I'm not going to deliver it for 6 months or 2 months or six weeks or 2 months or whatever. And that introduces all sorts of counterparty risk at the end of the day too, right? So to your point is you want to get those, you want to start buying now just to make sure that you've got some inventory, because at some point in time, if things get really hot, the inventory may or may not be there. All right. Well, look,
Sorry,
David, yeah,
Adam,
go ahead,
could
jump in.
I just want to jump in there. Yeah, Mike Maloney put it well. He coined it. Gold and silver could become unobtainable. Unobtainable because it's just gone. The inventories are gone. And that's the worst case scenario.
Yeah, and sorry, let me just correct that slightly. So he said that gold is likely to become an affordium, and silver is likely to become unobtainium. And of course, he was riffing off of the Pandora, the Avatar,
That's
but yeah, an
awesome.
affordium and unobtainium. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And another comment I wanted to make. I want to short the S&P and the NASDAQ using put options, in the money put options. And I'm talking for over months, not next week. But I'm concerned that the counterparty to that transaction may not be around to pay me. If there's a major banking crisis and the bank goes under and brokers go down and so forth, I might be right, but I still get nothing. And I bring that up because we were just talking about miners and how you get paid in dollars. Yeah, you might have massive gains, but what you get in return is basically worthless in the real world. So I just want to give you that example of how you have to be careful about what you're buying. You may make a lot of money, but at the end of the day, when you go to spend it, you get your gains and actually spend it. It's essentially worthless if the counterparty to that trade is still there. Because there's so many things coming our way, unfortunately. We've got wars, we've got banking crisis, we got potential stock market crash. It's not
Well,
a good time to be around.
I hear that same fear, not just related to, metals and things like that and hard assets, but just like, Social Security recipients. Hey, by the time I'm getting my Social Security, yeah, maybe it's $10,000 a month, but maybe all that does is buy me a cup of coffee, right? So it's becoming an increasingly widespread question, and certainly,
Pensions.
yeah, and the whole pension, the whole instability of our pension system. Another massive ticking time bomb, another topic, folks, that I've got lined up to address on this channel at some point in the not too distant future. All right, David, look, so many other questions that we could get into. We're just going to have to save them for the next time you come on the channel. It's been a real pleasure meeting you. For folks that really enjoyed the discussion and maybe are saying, hey, David's advice really makes a lot of sense to me, and it sounds like he's got a newsletter that maybe gives me some tips on certain high beta mining stocks to look at. Where can folks go to follow you and learn about you and your work?
You can find me at the fivebestreport.substack.com. You can also read my articles that I contribute to Sprott Money once a week at sprottmoney.com. And yeah, I think that I'm on Twitter at Global Pro Trader. You'll see me posting tweets almost daily, if not more often.
All right, great. And David, when I edit this, I will put up links prominently on the screen there to those URLs so folks know exactly where to go. Folks, the links will be in the description below this video too, so you can just go there with one click going forward. All right, David, I've got one last question to ask you, and I'll give you about 30 seconds to think about it while I think about your answer while I do a little bit of house cleaning here. The question is going to be, we've been talking a lot about money and monetary and financial wealth topics throughout this discussion. What's one non-money related investment you would encourage folks to adopt in their lives? Okay, folks, as David's thinking about that, if you've enjoyed this discussion with him, would like to see him come back on this program, please let him know by hitting the like button, then clicking on the red subscribe button below, as well as that little bell icon right next to it. As a reminder to folks, in addition to going and signing up for David's Substack, my Substack includes my Adam's Notes, which are my sort of Cliff Notes summaries of all the big interviews that we do on this channel, including this one with David. So if you want to get the recap of this interview plus all the other previous ones, just go to adamtaggart.substack.com. The premium subscribers get those notes. If you watch this channel regularly, you know that I recommend that the vast majority of people, unless they are already well-experienced DIY investors, they work under the guidance of a good professional financial advisor to navigate all of the macro issues and risks that David mentioned here. And look, if we're staring at a 20 to 30% market correction and then a rebound as the authorities step in, and then an 80% market crash, and then a hyperstagflationary scenario, you're going to need a cool professional head to help you navigate through all that. And to be honest, there aren't that many professional financial advisors that think about this stuff. So you want to make sure you're finding a good one who takes into account all these issues. Also, if you're going to put some money at work in the mining space, it is a highly volatile space, as I mentioned earlier. It has been a widow maker of a space for a long time. I agree with David. I think it's got good prospects ahead of it, but there's going to be twists and turns that, nobody's going to be able to foresee. You're going to want to talk to an advisor to ask, okay, what percentage of my portfolio makes sense to have in these stocks? Do I want to put any hedges or defensive positions in place to minimize my downside risks? So again, highly recommend you work with a good financial advisor on that stuff. If you've got one who's doing that for you, great, stick with them. They are worth their weight in gold, even the future price of gold that David was talking about. But if you don't, or you'd like a second opinion from one who does, consider scheduling a free consultation with one of the financial advisors that Thoughtful Money endorses. To do that, just fill out the short form at thoughtfulmoney.com. These consultations, totally free. You get personalized, bespoke advice to your own specific personal situation. There's no commitment to work with these guys. It's just a free public service they offer to help as many people as possible position as prudently as possible for what may lie ahead, including some of the potential developments that David is warning us about. All right, David, we're here at the end. What non-money related investment would you encourage people to consider adopting in their lives?
During COVID, I taught myself to cook my favorite meals at restaurants at home myself using organic ingredients. I also learned how to bake. My kids love my European style crusty bread, and before I can even get a slice, it's gone. But the main point I would recommend is that you learn how to grow your own food. It's rewarding. It's healthy. You're outside with nature. And you know, if you're using organic seeds or heirloom seeds, that you're eating the best produce possible. It's not going through any processes before it reaches your plate. And I think it's going to be a must-have skill in the future. And if it turns out that I'm wrong, everything turns out to be, peachy, no big deal. You're growing healthy food and you're outside, you're exercising, you're getting sunlight, you're enjoying nature, and it costs you next to nothing.
I'm so glad that you brought this up, and I'm surprised that no one else in the past 3 months has brought this one up sooner. I couldn't agree more. And as somebody who has done this, I can attest to everything you've said. And it's kind of almost like being a parent. Like, until you've done it, right? Until you've actually grown the food, cooked the food, eaten the food that you've raised, and then tasted it, you really can't get fully appreciate all the benefits that come along with this. I used to. Previous company, we used to talk a lot about resilience, and we had this framework called the eight forms of capital, and part of it had to do with investing in your own food systems and stuff like that. And we would position it as, look, if challenging times lie ahead, the outsized return you're going to get on this investment of your time is going to be massive, right? But even if it doesn't, to your point, even if the status quo just continues forever, you're not going to look back and say, why did I eat healthier? Why did I eat better food that costs less? Right? There's just no reason not to do this.
Exactly. And Adam, there's something great, something cool about, like, you're making burgers and there's no lettuce in the fridge. You walk out to your garden, you just rip it off, and you can eat it yourself. My kids do it. And then, but you bring it back in, you put it on the bun. Oh my God, there's
With
nothing
a
like it.
tomato and an onion that you made as
Yeah,
well.
exactly. It's rewarding in every sense. I don't know why everybody does. They should teach this at school.
Oh God, don't get me started. They absolutely should, along with financial literacy and a host of all other topics.
Yeah,
And
because
what's crazy, this is a whole other rant too, but like, I'm from a family of doctors, and probably the number one preventative step you could take is improving your nutrition, just for general health, right? Most med schools don't even teach a nutrition course, right?
Yeah, my wife is a naturopath, by the way. She's a
So.
doctor and she's got me covered. But I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The more you control your own destiny, and that means what you eat and your exercise and so forth, the healthier you're going to be. And health comes first. It doesn't matter how rich you are if you're, like, at death's bed. For me, it's the obvious. You were stating the obvious here, but it's amazing how few people do it. And there's something wonderful about putting a seed in the ground and seeing it flower, even if it is oh God, I can't think of a carrot. It doesn't matter. It's just I made that, and I'm going to eat it.
It's a great, fantastic feeling, but I will say it may not be as good as the feeling of breaking open a newly baked loaf of bread and putting that hot first slice in your mouth. So, David, I
Exactly.
hope someday to meet you. And when I do, I hope you're taking a loaf out of the oven there.
Yes, I will. And have a little bit of butter on top to just rub that in. Then it's to die for. But anyway, it was great talking to you, Adam. I really appreciate this. This is fantastic.
It was a real pleasure. David, thanks so much again. Look forward to having you on the program. Everybody else, thanks so much for watching.